April the 4th, and so, like oft times before, it comes time to leave this simple and rustic place with its very unusual inhabitants. None appeared to say goodbye at her departure upon the hour of noon. Was this breakdown in working obligations, or just a bit of bad luck? The scene upon departure was one of serenity. In this world, where war and time is forgotten, we passed by carpeted islands, sandy beaches, and above all, a wonderful clarity of water below which is said to be lurking. Also, we found a few fish. A myriad of colorful flying fish. Slowly, but I think slow perhaps to be an exaggeration of speed, our transport in the form of a ferry appeared, and then appeared to lie motionless between bouts of little movement in our direction. Eventually, a comparatively empty ferry boat pulled alongside, and we boarded like hungry pirates of old in search, yes, this time in search of our next adventure. We headed off on a 4-hour journey or so for time and plenty more in the shifting angle of the sun and its burning powers. Yet seemingly greater speed, we plodded on to our destination, which happily appeared with an element of suddenness. Sheltered as it was by, well, kind of like a pole-like army of islands, and gradually approaching a relatively newish harbour with too much haste, we managed to collide feebly with a jetty, a small lump of great strength and little consequence. Yes, it just happened to be where I was standing. I plodded the shore along a ramp of fresh rocks more suitable to four-wheel drives. Not too easy to get around here on two-wheel drives. A warning to less experienced drivers to be more careful. Accommodation was easily found in time to personally select a fish for dinner. In this little town of Labuhan Banjo, fish of delicate texture and very sweetish taste. It's all just known as local fish. To watch the sunset, yes. And the restaurant on stilts built over the sea. To me, an idyllic setting anywhere. But here, his introduction to Flores was particularly pleasant. The following morning, dawn, so I started a 4-hour journey eastwards along a great humorist recently called Trans Flores Highway. Humorist or sadist or whatever, this island has its own individual style of natural beauty. It is gentler and softer, as well as less tame than the wildness of Sumatra, but its lushness is starker and more frontier-like than Bali. The scenery of character and beauty, the road of equal character and non-existent beauty. We wound our way at about 30 kilometers or so on average speed. By the time of our arrival in the little town of Rutang, the storm clouds had gathered, and I was discharged from the bus into what was 3 minutes later a decent torrential downpour of significant quantities of aqua. And so, various levels of activity for the next 12 hours of rainfall continued. President Suharto recently said that he was concerned about the impact of foreign influences on the people of this region. The satellite dishes messed up any attempt to control access to first world news and opinions, for better or worse. And I am puzzled by the old episodes, some 15 to 20 years old, in fact, of the Y501 TV. This really must confuse some of the local people as to what the rest of the world is like. Quite funny looking at one episode, dressed very smartly with suits, colour and tie, sort of high humidity peak. Language, totally flat, times you can be such a decent occupation in the days alone. If this is a serious attempt to influence the local people, it could end up having effect on somewhere along the way. Onwards again, not putting up with this rain or this weather. As we headed east, the road changed also. I thought the Sumatra was bad. This road was in fact nothing less than shocking. As a first introduction to Indonesia, it was just like a scene out of hell, or so you could imagine. The journey was along 6 hours of deteriorating roads, compensated by incredible scenic beauty. It's wild, tame, hard, soft, smooth, and rough, all rolled into one. Deposited at a newly situated bus terminal some 3 kilometers from town, with no local transport, proved to be just the last straw. It appears to be a government attempt to give business to the local limo drivers who then commute between the town and the bus terminal. But the little town of Peshawar, it would not have done any harm to have had a few big buses rumble up its little quiet streets. The place itself was little other than a pleasant, busy little market. There was the opportunity to visit a traditional village, at Baina, to the south the following day, that was really rewarding. A combination of foot and bengal took me to this little village of consisting of about 20 houses situated on a small ridge under a mountain, or volcano no doubt, Gunung Nini, a relatively inactive volcano, so they say. The houses of simple local material on stilts with a high roof. Upon certain roofs were either a man of wood with 2 arrows in a miniature house, or a miniature house in the shape of a thatched roof, just like the roof itself. In other words, a small roof on top of the big roof. Between the 2 lamp houses were a series of ngadas and bangles. The ngada, 3-meter-high pole, carved design with a dome-shaped roof. The varga, a miniature house of 7 pieces of wood. The origin of both symbols, wooden symbols, deeply etched in the cultures of the people. A stroll back from Baina to some really beautiful countryside. Again, picturesque and splendid in its own way, and yet retaining individual character again all of its own. Comments without fear probably beginning to repeat themselves a bit too much. Next leg number 3 to Endgame. Again, the scenery, the wild roads, it could be monstrous, but was not by far. The last stretch into Endgame itself was by a fairly reasonable coastal road recently constructed. I now begin to forget what reasonable is. The town itself was very nondescript, having been hit by an earthquake some 2 years ago. It only got hit a little bit, but it did a considerable damage to the area. It is fun to see Golding featured being the subject of Earth's anger. The accommodation here at Losman's house was the only redeeming feature of the town. And then onwards again. So far, only beautiful scenery and a few cultural villages have done it been enough to detain this otherwise beautiful island. To what is without doubt the highlight of Nosa Tenggara, certainly one of the highlights of Indonesia, the coloured lakes of Kilimutu. We headed off northeastward towards the sleepy village of Moni, which lies on the slopes of the Mount Mutu, or to give it its proper local name, Kilimutu. We arose early in the morning as a group of 18 or 20 or so, and got a lift along a 15-kilometre route up the mountain towards the sunset, well, towards the sun, where we hope to see the sun rise. A short walk around what appeared and was a route just below the crater rim took us slowly then and eventually to the first viewing point in the early dawn, as the first rays of light began to cast across the sky, lighting it up to a dark blue. On the right, below, in the crater, in one of the three craters, a lake of dark green, whilst to the left, a second crater held a most beautifully colored lake of turquoise, which in the dawning of the day as it slowly took place inevitably took on a radiance out of this world. It's perhaps in the region of 150 to 200 meters across in diameter, looking like a giant lamp beneath a turquoise lampshade. With so little light in the early morning, it was difficult to understand how it could have taken on such a brilliance. The third crater was less impressive in terms of color, but the concept beyond the fact that it was a different color to the other two, this time a dark black and maroon color, depending on the amount of light. The three lakes changed color from time to time, not overnight, but on a gradual basis. It is difficult for anybody to explain what is causing other than the sulfur content of the lakes themselves. They change to reddish brown, light green, and any color like white. A gentle walk of some 15 kilometers back down to contemplate what they might have seen in that early morning through some beautiful rice fields. The setting so relaxed and peaceful that its bountiful essence penetrated the pores of the skin as an exotic lotion, the magic of serenity. Those are pretty good words. Onwards, Lord Eastwood began towards Moulmere on the coast, where a very different view of nature presented itself. No beauty here. It was the scene of a very devastating earthquake from 2 years ago, and which has taken a long time for reconstruction to have any impact. Many buildings still lay in complete and absolute ruins. It would be the same earthquake that had a milder effect upon Inde to the south. A tidal wave in this area was caused by the earthquake, accounted for some 800 of the 2,000 deaths, 800 being from one village of a total population of only 1,200. Also, how high were the waves, he pronounced, as high as a coconut tree. He was driving behind a small coconut tree. Anyway, the first sight was of the church with its two bell towers, Spanish style, shattered, and the rest of the church looking like a spoiled child, oversized, played with brick by brick. Brick buildings bore fractures like trophy shells, and the general atmosphere in the town was one very depressed. The accommodation I found was noteworthy in its very unusualness. Somebody else described it as a dump, but in the same sentence said they would actually return there on their way back. It was situated at the back of a very quiet tour agency, and from its tour board, the last tour I think was some 6 months previously. The first thing of note was a branch about a foot in diameter of a tree growing horizontally across the entrance. Not too bad, but it was at about a height of 5 feet. In the garden, like setting behind it, was about what to all intents and purposes was a collection of a half dozen garden sheds, each capable of taking a double bed of bamboo, very hard based, and a very odd assortment of furniture. The structure of the rooms themselves were of bamboo, but in a relaxed, scruffy, and pleasing manner, clean basically. In the central, covered courtyard area, pointing to the entrance, was a bar, a very old gun, some 2 inches in diameter. A few plaster busts of odd character, a sprinkling of plants, most of which seemed dead, and from which hung eggshells. The creation of a madman, no doubt, but the owner, Mr. Arnold, a quiet, pleasant individual, I think he probably was a madman. The cost was ridiculously cheap, some $1.50 equivalent for the night. And the production of a bottle of rice wine that evening brought in return quantities of fish and chilies, both for an evening meal and for a repeat in the morning. It was fresh fish in the morning. The 4 hour drive from here to Larantuka, further east, was through yet some more beautiful countryside, brought to an end some 30 hours of bus journeys in order to cover 700 kilometers of road. You can work out the mathematics on that, but it's a pretty poor average. I have survived the Trans-Flores Highway. Yes. The total length of the island is only some 370 kilometers, so the fact that there are 700 kilometers of road indicates just the nature of the roadway. The coastal port of Larantuco is of something like 1.5 streets, strung out at the foot of an equally steep volcano. There are many volcanoes here. If it ain't a volcano, it isn't a hill. The change money here took an hour. To clarify shipping timetables, even more time. Such as my knowledge of the local language, things do move definitely slower in this part of the world. The 3 kilometer walk in the heat of the day was crazy exercise. It is hot, it is humid. Certainly one way of working up a hell of a thirst. The boat ferry out on a 25-meter boat. We're getting smaller boats as we go east, you may notice. Was through some spectacular island scenery. I'm running out of adjectives. Every hill had character of its own. Every island was dominated by a large volcano. Before we reached Rembeta Island. The first island out was Adenora, the second Rembeta, the third Pantar, and the fourth Aloha, and we were going to the second to start with. It was mother volcano Ili Api. Chain smoke all the time. Decidedly unhealthy exercise for all of sundry, but yet in this setting all is so relaxed and quiet. This word relaxed and quiet, the phrase relaxed and quiet is creeping in all too frequently to the point I fear to overuse it. Since the Trans-Sumbawa trip to Komodo, this section of the trip has been top class. It is, I believe, a combination of days filled with travel, the actual travelling time itself, a reasonable 4 to 6 hours a day, an additional 2 hours to cover both ends, and a bit of time for exploration in between. In brief retrospect, it has been the ideal mix, but ironically, it has been too short for this lovely island. So much not seen, and mostly so difficult to penetrate and probe that this travelling has been quite capable. This morning, that unfortunate malaise of Indonesian life struck carefree easygoing. No timetable, at least in this part of the world, and a surprising delay to allow the daily life to start. Buses. All I wanted to do was to get to the northwest of Lembeta, but there was no transport. There is little or no private transport on this island, and a few buses or trucks provide the only means of transport, and they run around market days. I was told that the buses ran 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Quite a choice. So I decided to head for the 7 o'clock one. But by 7:30, I was slowly realizing through experience that there was nothing. There was nothing happening on the road. People were walking, yes. A few cars, yes, but there was definitely no motorized transport heading the way I wanted to go. So off I headed north in the search of some traditional weaving. Me, walking, what turned out in that day a total of 50 kilometers, looked for some weaving. On the slopes of Ili Api, the size of the volcano are quite considerable as I barely got halfway around the base of it. It is a big volcano. By 12 that day, I had decided to turn back. Well, I was going to get around the whole volcano, but not before finding a beautiful setting where I decided to have some lunch. It was very quiet. No sooner had I produced a can of sardines and some crackers, along with some refreshing water, and I was surrounded by some 15 to 20 children, who then proceeded to wash every step of my way as I opened the can, salted the fish, a little bit, put on the cracker, drank the water. Their natural curiosity was unbelievable. Something I had been warned about before going into the area, you cannot take it. If you get upset at this kind of intrusion into one's own privacy, then do not go. But no doubt, tourists are still a novelty in this little part of the world. Not so bad back in the main centre, Lebobello, where they are far more used to tourists, but the slopes of Ili Api do not get them. Us. The evenings are quieter here, with even less to do than imaginable. Yeah, it's a bit of time for a little bit of reading. A little bit of writing. Tomorrow I head off to La Malera, a whaling village on the south coast, where they still catch whales in small boats. By sailing first, often, then rowing alongside. This begins to sound very easy. And then harpooning the big sod. Yeah, it's very traditional. Just recently, three boats got stuck into one large whale, which in its anger managed to sink two of them and dragged the third in the direction of Timor. They suspended whaling for a few days subsequently until they got the boats back. It is certainly a rough way, a tough way of earning a few bucks. Looked at a map today. Yes, we have these profound sort of statements from time to time. And there is another island beyond the next destination which is appealing, but represents the real risk of travel here. There is always just another jewel that tantalizes to arouse passionate side interest. Anyway, off we headed on a tiring road journey, passing through the little village of Bota and a few others of lesser note. We stopped for a short while in this basic market. Small collections of fruit and vegetables on sale, lacking any of the quantity and vitality of other markets. The poorness of the area, easily taken in by the clothing of the people, the footwear, and their great curiosity as to who was travelling through. Shortly after the village of Bota, our truck refused to go further, or at least the driver refused to go further, and we all started walking. After a few kilometers of shopping road, my rucksack had enough. It actually, one of the buckles snapped, and I decided that I was better to return to town to try and pinch a snapped buckle in the capital town of Lebo Bello than to try and do so in La Malera. These big decisions you gotta make as a tourist. Off again the following day, this time getting further than Bota and actually arriving at the village of Pior, which we had not even reached the day before. And then from Pior, which was at the top of the hill, descended into a real paradise of unbelievable beauty. Certainly this is a setting to beat all earlier settings. The people in Manalea itself, genuinely friendly in their greeting. The atmosphere, relaxed and warm. I found a bed at Mr. Ben's rest house. One of the local teachers, it seems to be a profession of any teacher to actually try and supplement their income by setting up little guest houses in Indonesia. Anyway, Mr. Ben and his wife run a little, wonderful little establishment for three meals a day plus accommodation. It was costing only something like $3.50 a day. It's difficult to beat this kind of value. But then the electricity is only from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning. The food is healthy. But fish, cut from the sea, of course. Anyway, we're beginning to drivel a little bit, I think I gather. A walk through the beach, along the beach, reveals some 25-30 fishing boats, the big boats which they use for hunting the whales, and a wider collection of smaller boats. All the boats, the bigger boats, are about some 8 to 2 metres in size, but it is the bamboo ladder-like structure which juts out from the front, from the bow, and upon which the harpoonist stands in order to throw or to plunge his harpoon into the whale. They carry a crew of some 16, 14 oarsmen, a harpoonist, and helmsman. The ownership of their boats is peculiar in that they are passed. Ownership rests with individuals of a particular clan, and ownership passes through the clan. The people who sailed may not necessarily be the owners, but are co-opted if the clan is happen to be shorter people, or some clans have more people than required, so they pass them on to other clans. but it is the responsibility of each clan to ensure that its vote is kept up to scratch. All boats are constructed of wood without the use of nails or any other artificial ingredients. Evening time is very quiet and relaxing in this wonderful old town. Children have made their own homemade toys, including little sailing boats. There is no TV here to occupy them. Yes, this is a place where Christianity is combined with animism in a peculiar blend, itself having only arrived so less than 100 years ago. The start of the main fishing season, the Lefa, L-E-F-A as it is called, in May, is one such festival where a bishop now presides over a traditional ceremony and its rites, a peculiar combination, one that I would love to have seen. An afternoon quasi-inspection of these boats. Yes, as I said. Just consider standing upon that bamboo framework in calm seas, yes, you may do it. But in rough seas, when you're hunting either manta rays, which weigh up to a ton, or whales, which probably get pretty angry once they get a harpoon on their back, it is definitely very dangerous work. There are a few casualties inevitable in such process, but the individuals themselves are of no major good. Back the same route to Lewabelle, leaving behind this little magical place which seems to have escaped progress so simply and so well. A visit, a walk around the night market at London, prior to an early morning departure by boat along the northern coastline around several islands. By midday, we had reached the end of stage one, the little harbour village of Ballorien, on the same island of Lembeke. The harbour itself, well, at least appear, was quite sizable, but the view of Ili Api, the same volcano, now seen from the other side, really impressive. After a night on deck, well, it was the best accommodation I could find. We sailed early and enthusiastically, and after a short stop to collect some people from a small village, we arrived at where a very prolonged process of people and cargo transfer took place between our boat and the shore, the Reno Harbour. This prolonged period of activity was followed by a prolonged period of inactivity, inexplicable as to why nothing was actually happening. By 11 o'clock we left for further scenic pleasures along this group of islands, sparse populations, many, many low hills of considerable aridity, few beaches, and no magic spots, just considerable beauty. But nothing that you'd say, I would like to go back and build a little place there. Slowly we wound away between two islands, Pantar and the Lower, and up along Inlet to Calabani, the main town on the island of the Lower. The setting is very good, but there is little to the town itself, and less to the poor market. A day trip to the traditional village of Takpala was a particular bonus to my stay here. A shortish walk from town on a hillside, about 50 metres up, overlooking the sea, lies this little village where time moves forward and people don't. And they actually get poorer in the process. They're living just on the subsistence level, having only given up the process of the tradition of headhunting in the 1950s. Not really uncivilized, they say, because subsequent to a war, when peace was declared, they would return the heads of the victims to the tribe from which they came from. But it was only 40 years ago. It's funny to think. Anyway, I had lunch in this little village and smoked the local tobacco. Very pleasant tobacco, but when you're sitting around a group of people who quite clearly were brought up in the tradition of headhunting, gives rise to a different sense of atmosphere. And it's all about atmosphere. But this 2 days here was only a little introduction to a lore. Although there is much here to keep you interested in terms of travel and village visiting. that 2 weeks would be far more appropriate. A few short walks out of the town, and, as I mentioned, a very depressing market. The absence of any real variety of fruit was a real depressant. Yeah, I mentioned that. It's really depressing markets. They are poor. And that brings an end to this side of the tape. We shall continue with the trip from Alor to Sulawesi upon the next tape, or thereabouts. For Alor is a magic place, except for the markets. Except for the markets.